Hello and welcome to the 10HP Broadcast, the show where we take a single game from the past few years, break it out, play it for a month, and come back and talk about our impressions. I'm your host, Chris Peters, and with me today is Anthony Nguyen.
Hello.
And Paul Main.
Hello.
All right. So this month, we took a look at BioShock, the first one. Not Infinite, not BioShock 2, but BioShock, the one without a label. And it was my suggestion. The reason I chose the game is that I've always been enamored with the story. I know that most of our group isn't really that big on first-person shooters, but I've really liked that world, and that was one of the first stories that took me out. Like, I wanted to read more fiction about it, and I wanted to find out more about that world. So I read the book, I don't know if there's more than one book, but I read a book, and I really like that story and that world that they've created. The mechanics I thought were slow enough paced that even people who didn't like first-person shooters would still enjoy it, especially because there were huge swaths of effectiveness. Like, some things are totally ineffective and some things are super effective against certain enemies, so you can kind of strategize more than just shooting. So I thought that everyone would enjoy it and introduce you to the story and maybe give us a leg into BioShock Infinite if people enjoyed this enough to move on to that. So without much more discussion, Anthony, what did you think of the game in general?
The game in general? Well, let me first state that I'm not a big fan of first-person shooters. And, well, so I gave this game a try, and I did run into it. I got to say, you're right, slow enough pace where I was able to actually not worry about, fast-paced, shooting. And I did enjoy my share of shooting. Mm-hmm. But I did run into a point in the game where I threw my hands up and gave up. But okay, besides that, unfortunately, I do enjoy story and everything, but this one did not pull me out like
right. It
did for you.
Okay. Yeah. Paul?
I, too, am not a huge fan of first-person shooters. I'd say my experience mostly comes from playing Counter-Strike a lot, and then a little bit of Doom and Quake, and that's about it. Maybe Team Fortress.
Right.
And so I don't generally pick these games up by myself, so I'm glad I got to play another one recently, BioShock. And I would say that I enjoyed it as like an art piece, but did I actually have fun playing it? I had some fun at some places, but overall it wasn't a game that I wanted to go back to and play every single time.
Right.
And I would say that's because the story wasn't actually drawing me in. The world was great and I really enjoyed it, and I'd be interested to read like a book about it, but the actual story that was in the game didn't draw me in.
Okay.
And we can talk about
that. So let's talk about that. Well, let me say, I guess I've already stated my position. So I enjoyed this game. I enjoyed the story, especially because it's got that what's that guy's name? The Sixth Sense and...
Oh.
Hellboy Joel.
Signs.
Oh, M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, it's got kind of that moment in there, the plot twist, and it's like, I really wasn't expecting that, and I was impressed with that when the first time I experienced it. Granted, I've now played this game three times through, and so this is my third time, 5 years later, so it's a little bit hazy on how I remember the actual experience of seeing that, but
sure,
I still like that plot point, and I still like the way it kind of unfolded. So I like this game. I like the story. The shooting is, we'll talk about it. But generally, I liked it enough to play it again, to nominate it, to get other people interested in it. So that's where I'm at. So let's talk about why the story didn't draw you in.
Okay.
For both of you, because both of you seem a bit lukewarm about it.
Why don't you go first, Paul, would you kindly?
Okay. See, that, actually, I really did like that plot twist. And the plot twist we're talking about is when Andrew, Ryan, Like the scene where
spoiler alert, this whole podcast is spoilers.
The scene where you're going and you meet Andrew Ryan, you're gonna kill him because you think you're working with Atlas, and Andrew Ryan's basically the, you know, really big bad guy, which he might be anyway. But so you kill him, but he kind of reveals that you're being mind controlled, and you're just kind of a, you're Andrew Ryan's son, as far as I can tell.
Right.
Right. And but you've only been around for a year, or so, and you've been basically changed, your, you know, psychologically altered so that you would just do whatever Fontaine says, and he'd always use the word "would you kindly,"
right?
Which is great, and I liked, and it was surprising, and I liked that plot twist. But that was pretty much the only part of the story that I really liked. Is because leading up to that, I had no idea why I was working for Atlas or doing all the things that he would always tell me to do. It turns out it's because he would say "would you kindly" all the time, but that doesn't really make sense because, like, when you meet Andrew Ryan, right? He's like, you know, how about you, you know, do whatever, would you kindly, and you do it. And it shows that, like, there's this control over you when you say "would you kindly," right?
Well, Andrew Ryan doesn't say that.
No, he does. He also says "would you kindly."
Not until the end, or is that...
You only kill me. Not? I don't remember him. Andrew Ryan, the only time you talked to him was at the end when he says, yes. "kill me."
Yes, I'm talking about the ending sequence. Oh, okay.
Right.
And
right.
But that's when, like... he reveals to you that the "would you kindly" words, that you can't resist them.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Except that also shows that if he just says "would you kindly," he can make it so he doesn't, you don't kill him, because he just has to say, you know, "would you kindly, you know, go away," or something like that. And so it didn't really make any sense to me, like, why Andrew Ryan wanted to die, or like, because obviously he had a lot of power there over you.
That's, right. I think that that's... part of the depth of the character that's intriguing to me, is that he obviously knew that he could stop you.
Yes, but he chose
not to.
Yeah,
he chose to destroy the world rather than let Frank Fontaine take it over, and that was really his struggle. The struggle really wasn't with you. You were just an instrument in this contest between Frank Fontaine and him.
Right. But at that point, like, his struggle had ended. Like, he failed to destroy the
world.
Well, not the world, but whatever rapture is. And so it was just you and him. Like, you know, at that point,
right.
And he still chose to, like, just admit defeat and kill himself.
Well, I'm not sure.
No. That came after. You had to disable the self destruct after you.
No, that was before.
That was before.
Yeah, okay. That's when you ran into Sophia Lamb, and he tried to kill all the air.
You made the giant shock bomb thing or whatever.
Or in rapture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No. That was to get in. The bomb was to get into his area.
Sorry, you're right. You're right.
He tried to destroy all the trees, which would suffocate everyone in rapture.
Okay.
But the you go through this area in his thing. I think where he's still piecing together why you are who you are.
Right.
Because he's connected all these pictures, and he's got audio dialogues, like, from Soo Chong.
Mm-hmm. The one room right in front of...
Right before you talk to him,
yeah.
And I think he hasn't fully realized what you are until pretty much right when you get there.
Uh-huh.
So I think maybe he... maybe he could undo that with controlling you, but he's given up at that point.
Yeah, he has. He's given up. And I want to know, like, why he... He's given up, because it doesn't seem quite like in his character. He seems like a very, you know, like a captain of industry, domineering type who wants to control everybody anyway. So why did he
Sounds like he's trapped under, you know, in his world.
Miles of water.
Well, yeah, I think world. Speaking from the book, I think he feels like a failure, because he's got his vision is this perfect world of rapture, and it's, you know, total hands-off government. You know, everybody does whatever they want to do, and they're totally unrestricted, and the world crumbles around him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's his legacy. Does he really want to keep that? I don't know. It's a complicated subject.
Yeah.
Why is he really doing this? Yeah. I don't know. Ultimately, that's a decision he made, and that's a decision this, you know, story crafters made for him.
Yeah.
But I think there's some real justification that could be made for that decision.
I agree.
Whether or not it's hard to stomach.
I don't know. It just didn't seem to make sense to me. Like, why would he demonstrate that there's mind control here and it's possible, but then have him kill you anyways? And then...
But I mean, if you throw your whole life into going under the ocean, giving up societies, trying to stay away from everybody, build this utopia, and then the utopia fails,
Right.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, probably pretty bad, yeah. I guess. But okay. I don't know if
suicidal.
But I actually enjoyed that part. Like, that was the one part of the story that I did like. The problem that I really have with the story is that until that point, nothing really draws you in at all.
Right.
And you don't even get to see yourself, really, or figure out who you are or why you're here or why you would do everything that these people want. Like, I don't know. If I encountered that world, I'd probably stay at the top so I could get picked up, you know, by like some plane when people find the plane crash or whatever.
Right.
There's no reason to be down there.
You definitely have the motivation of a video game. Right. Right? You just do the stuff that you're right. being put in front of you.
And the characters seem kind of one dimensional. Even the Andrew Ryan experience, I mean, he has a lot of depth to him, but what I mean by one dimensional is there's no real interaction. Like, everything's pre-scripted, right? So, and all the other people that you meet are always behind like shields or whatever, right. And you don't really get to talk to them at all. So you don't really feel like you're a part of the world. I just felt like I was outside of the story.
I felt the same way because I guess it's the second time, but when you meet Tannenbaum,
yeah,
in the Little Sisters enclave where all the
even
good
she's
little sisters,
behind a thing,
right? Mm-hmm. It's like the shadow box thing where she's standing there talking to you. The lights come on, she talks, then the lights go out, and she's gone. You're like, why is she like not interacting directly with you?
Right.
That's really weird. It was disorienting.
I think that has to do with the age of the game. I think if they made it today, they would have made it so that like you can just talk to all the people. All the people would be really well voice acted, and you could do the interaction.
It might have been like they're keeping you at a distance, so the effect, the realism isn't upset because
you're
these guys aren't
told
look perfect.
What to do again.
No, there's that, but I think what Paul's saying is probably true. So this game had slightly, somewhat dated graphics and capacity, and they just were trying to make the experience better by not letting you get too close to the things which were imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't have really great people, mm-hmm. they weren't going to spend a lot of time animating or whatever to make, and there's that whole, what's that reality thing, the Uncanny Valley. Experience.
Yes.
So it might take you out of the experience if you got too close and you're like, is this a real person?
Mm-hmm. So those were my problems with the game. Also, Fontaine to me felt kind of contrived because he, basically after all that happens, then he just turns into this like mob boss guy. And he just, he's like, I'm just mean. I want to take over Rapture and,
thanks for helping me do it.
Stop, And his voice just like irritates me. I thought it was like a total archetype voice.
Right.
It didn't really breathe life into him. And so, anyway, I just.
So you thought he was poorly voice acted?
I did. I did.
Interesting.
I mean, he sounded like he was in I was going to say like a mob movie from the 50s, but this is kind of like the 60s, so maybe it would fit, but,
Someone needs to explain to me, what you do after you kill Ryan. What do you do to that supercomputer? You insert your card. I thought you were trying to stop the Ratcher from self-destructing after you killed Ryan.
No. But at that point,
and then
that's when Fontaine control of all the systems.
Because
your genetic code controls a lot of what access you have in Rapture. Because you're Andrew Ryan's son, you have virtually limitless access because your genetic code is rather similar to his. So, you want to get through doors, you want to use the bathyspheres. Only Andrew Ryan's allowed to use the bathyspheres. Mm-hmm. So,
you mean right now?
During the gameplay.
I know, but I mean, in the world, it seemed like. There was like a metro system at some time.
Yeah, the bathyspheres were public.
Yeah.
And then he shut them down when there was the Civil War.
I see.
And that's why there were protesting signs when you first get off, let us leave.
Yeah.
Well, let us leave is more of a thing. You can't ever leave Rapture. You sign in. You sign to come down to the city. You're never allowed to go back because he's paranoid about the KGB or CIA.
Yeah,
or somebody
I remember that. That's right.
Finding out about the city and coming to take control of it. But anyway, he closed down transit between the different zones with the bathysphere. He closed down a lot of different things to only himself. And because you're his son, you have access to those things. So what you did with the machine was you changed the genetic key over to Fontaine so that he became the owner of all the systems.
Okay. I thought you know, that's where you're trying to stop the Ratcher from self-destructing at that point.
No, but no.
Anyways. Yeah.
But
I liked it.
So what about Diaries? Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah, that's another story problem for me. I mean, because I like the Diaries in general, like the concept, because you get like basically all the fluff of mm-hmm. the world, you know, and you get to learn about all these characters that you're not interacting with, but that had to do with like the fall of Rapture.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, they're just like diaries that are left everywhere around.
They definitely don't make sense. I was saying that they have the Monty Python-esque yes. thing, you know, where the guys are like recording their death. Or, you know, recording some event in their life, and you're like, what are the odds that they had the recorder on at this right. point? And why are they recording all the way to this point?
Su Chong's kind of made sense.
Yeah, Su Chong. Well, the ones, some of them made sense.
Yeah, but other ones are, yeah, I totally agree.
There's a lot of diaries, yes. but I picked them up because it's a game mechanic, you know, compulsion for me. And then I listen to it, but I largely ignore what they're saying.
Unless you need to go back and find out a number that's in one of the diaries so that you can yes. open a door.
And my other problem was, like, I don't know what happened, but my subtitles did not keep up with the audio.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Yeah. It's weird. Like, so, sometimes it would just go off, and sometimes they'd be, well, no, I think it was just sometimes they would always be behind.
Yeah, I would only get one page of subtitles, and the audio continues after that. And
I wish it paused the game. That, honestly, I really did. Because every once in a while, because I learned that you don't want to keep moving the game while you're listening to a diary, otherwise right. I'm going to get killed. But I would also stay still, and every once in a while, like a splicer would come up from behind, or like something bad would just happen to me while I'm listening to one. It's kind of a bummer.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, the diaries are definitely one of my favorite things about the game. And because, you know, one of the alternative to BioShock was going to be Dead Space. And Dead Space is the exact same thing. Characters pop up and they talk to you while you're moving through. You find audio logs and you listen to what the people were saying. The problem is they also have text logs, and I never read any of the text logs. The text logs you have to bring up, you read the text, you just stand still and you read them.
Mm-hmm.
I never read any of that fluff. Yeah. I only listen to the audio, and that's the same thing with BioShock. You know, I listen to everything and I love getting that flavor.
Mm-hmm.
But if it were in text, I just wouldn't read it.
Mm-hmm. I'm the complete opposite. Resident Evil stops the game, and you pull up the report, turn page by page, and I prefer to get my story that way.
Interesting. Yeah.
Well, it does have an advantage in that, like, if you miss something when they're saying something, then you can easily just, like, if you're doing the reading, you can just read it again. But, right. You know, if you always have to listen to the whole thing again or figure out which one it was, if there's, like, two back, because if it's not on your T button.
Right. You know. Right, yeah, the T button. The interface of this and the Windows E elements are all kind of weird and not very good. I seem to remember in the Xbox, like, you could go back and see how much research you'd done on a guy, and I had no way, couldn't find that anywhere in the interface for this. But it's just, there were lots of problems with this, and you guys probably didn't go back and do this, but the field of view issue that was reported. I mean, they have a fixed field of view. So if you're viewing it on a widescreen
mm-hmm.
display, they just stretch the sides to that width,
mm-hmm.
which pushes the top up,
mm-hmm.
but keeps the same aspect ratio. So the stretching and the thing actually means you get less viewable area on a widescreen than you do on a normal screen. So there was a fix for that, but you had to enable it. And it also supposedly helps with vertigo, or, you know, if you get motion sickness from 3D shooters, to have more field of view.
Oh.
Because the narrow field of view, apparently.
Yeah, it took me three games play sessions to get over that.
Yeah, it took me two.
Anyway, so you guys didn't deal with that.
No.
Anyway, there were a lot of Windows-y things that were just annoying about that.
So there is no way to review audio dialogues you've picked up.
No, there is.
Yeah, oh,
there
you can play them again.
Oh,
yeah, you've got to go. You actually the menu? That one.
It was hard to find. Menu.
Yeah,
I found.
Because the menus, you couldn't, like, there were two menus, weren't there?
Yeah, there were two menus.
It had different things in them.
Mm-hmm. The Windows interface I didn't like.
And there was no way to tell what plasmids you had equipped, unless you went to a machine.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, you could just scroll through them. You're just talking about plasmids or the tonics?
I'm talking about tonics.
Oh, yeah.
Plasmids,
tonics,
you
yeah.
could see.
Yeah.
By scrolling through. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the tonics, yeah, you don't know what that is. Yeah. I remember thinking much more about the tonics the first time I played.
Uh-huh.
This time I just was like, eh, whatever. I'll just take that.
Yeah. What combos did you guys use in order to like overcome your enemies?
Overcome the enemies?
Yeah.
Mine was all support, like extra research. That uh-huh. was it, the photographing, because I, you know, another compulsion I do. You know.
Yeah, I tried to resist that one because I'm like, I could spend a lot of time photographing this, or I could just finish the game. So I went with that.
Well, photographing's yeah. huge, makes a huge impact.
That's how you unlock extra tonics.
Yes.
Well, you unlock extra tonics, but you get extra damage on guys, and then yeah. it's big to do research on.
Oh,
on
well, guys. For me, well, I was playing on easy, so I guess that didn't really matter.
Right.
Yeah. And I was playing on normal. It probably makes, you know, more of a difference on hard, but if I was feeling like a certain type of guy I wasn't getting enough damage on, then I'd take some pictures. But other than that, I would just keep moving.
Every guy I had to take a picture of, so get the research done as fast as possible. And I yeah. had to take like three pictures of each guy
yep.
until you run out of things. Yeah. I'm like that, though.
You know, same here. Like, okay, I know 3 is the magic number, because then I can't get any more research off of that.
So just real quick, I started playing hard, and then I switched down to normal, because I was like, I've played this already, and I need to prove to anybody that I can get through hard. And it just isn't as much fun, mm-hmm. because it is such a management system. Like, you have to really use the right ammo for everybody, and you have to fight more intelligently, and you're always using health packs. I think there's plenty of ammo and plenty of health packs, but it's just a lot more maintenance, and I was like, I just want to go through this smooth and not have to worry about it.
See, I felt that way when I was playing a normal, because I'm not anywhere near as good of a player of these first-person shooters as you are, but so I did felt like I had to always manage my health and my, or not mana, but my, what is it called? The blue stuff.
Eve?
Yeah, Eve, my yeah. Eve. And I would frequently have to go to the vending machines and buy, like, and stock up and spend my money on that rather than, like, ammo that I wanted or something like that.
No, I always, like, my wallet's always full.
Yeah.
And, yeah. but I do stock up. Like, you know, I always keep this stuff maxed out, but
right.
I don't buy ammo. I never buy ammo.
Right.
Because I just switch weapons or whatnot.
No, I buy ammo a lot because I, you know, I get like the combo I wanted in order to take down the big baddies. And then I don't need to figure this out anymore. I'm just going to buy the ammo that works for me.
That's true. When you you actually taught me about a good combo to deal with big daddies, and I started switching to electric buck.
So it works pretty well.
I did have to buy that because that stuff's pretty rare.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
For the most part, I don't buy ammo. In fact, I'm kind of bad about it. I stick with like one gun all the time.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what gun is that? Shotgun all the time.
Shotgun?
It's the wrench.
Yeah.
That's what I stuck with like most of the time.
That's the first time I played was I had like 2 sport boosts. I had the camouflage one.
Yeah.
I had, you know, and I was like this wrench jockey, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That one. So I was like this crazy melee guy. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm not going to waste ammo or I'm not going to use ammo. I'm worried about that. I'm just going to kill people with the wrench.
My weapon of choice is a machine gun because it has a large clip. And another important thing is that, you know, playing on easy, you know, things do die to... Yeah,
easy had 40% health on all enemies, and they do 1/8 the damage to you.
1/8?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, my God.
Unfortunately for me, I do enjoy that because I just wanted to play the game and kill guys easily. I didn't want to strategize or anything like that.
That's really easy.
Yep.
I'm surprised about that.
Yeah,
I did at one point think, like, right before the end of the game, I'm like, when I take on the last boss, I'm probably going to have to switch this down to easy. That's like, that was my mental attitude going in.
Right.
But it turns out I like, played him twice, and then I beat him. And I'm like, okay, I guess it's over. He wasn't as hard as I expected.
No. He actually isn't that hard. But as long as you realize that he's changing forms.
Right.
Which
is really hard not to figure out,
because
you have to go up there and hit like whatever the button is to drain him and stuff. And,
right.
Yeah. So I
didn't fight him. That sounds very complicated.
Yeah.
It's not. So after, just to summarize really quick, after you change it over, then he issues some kill command to you to like have your body start shutting down and dying. And you get free of that by taking some potions that Su Chong had whipped up an antidote to the mind control.
Because Fontaine was too paranoid to not have an antidote, remember?
Right. Yeah.
But it turns out that's the wrong move.
Anyway, so then he starts using Atom. For whatever reason, to this point, he'd never used it. And he just starts going crazy with all the Atom he has control of. Now he just starts overdosing, and he becomes this huge monstrosity. And you get up to his area, and he's this crazy hulking beast. And he uses all these plasmid powers and whatnot. Way more than the player can ever equip.
Oh, yeah, way more.
But he's this crazy monster, and he tries to kill you. And every, there's four rounds where he uses different powers, and you have to go, after you beat his health down a bit, he goes back to recharge, and you go use a syringe on him to suck out some of his Atom.
Yeah.
And then eventually.
Except for the last one, and all the little sisters do it.
Right. Then all the little sisters come and stab him with their syringes.
All the ones you've saved?
Yes.
Right.
If you didn't save any, would the any little sisters come out?
Yeah, they still would do it. It's okay. The exact same ending.
But you get a different ending.
Okay, so the reason I played both originally was to see the different endings.
Yeah.
And that after they stab the guy down, then there's this different, like, it's the same thing as Mass Effect.
Right.
Where you just watch a different video clip at the end.
Right. Right.
But it's, you know, one way they're like, all the sisters respect you and you brought them to the surface. And the other way it's like, I don't remember even how the other way is, so I shouldn't talk about it. But it's the opposite. You know, like, you're monster, and they're afraid of you, but they, you know, they give in to you because you're so powerful control. And whatnot.
You stay in Rapture?
What's that?
I said if you're...
I think you do.
Oh, really?
But maybe not.
How the frick does that thing keep, like, operating? Because it seems like everyone who operates it is either dead now or crazy.
Right. It has definitely questionable integrity.
Yeah.
It had questionable integrity from the get-go. Like, how do you bring enough resources to make a go of things?
Oh, yeah.
Especially when everyone's out for themselves.
Right.
That's actually the big problem with Rapture, is that, you know, you need janitors and things, and everybody wants to be this philanthropist, you know, this rich guy and, you know, powerful, and that's why they come. Anyway, that's getting more into the world and more into the book, I think. But yes, how does it keep operating, and why are there so many freaking crazy people all over the place? Yeah.
The other thing I would say to Anthony, is because he doesn't know, is that there's at the end you become kind of like a big daddy at the end.
Right.
Yeah, which is kind of cool. Like, you have to collect all the equipment, and then...
Well, did you start playing Bioshock 2 at all?
I did. I started just because I wanted to see what it was like, and then I was extremely disappointed that, like, oh, I, you know, you're a big daddy, but you were, you know, that's kind of like was your transformation in the last one, so I was like, that's already
You're a big daddy with a drill.
Yeah, with a drill.
You don't have a wrench, you have a drill.
Yeah. I also, like, spoiled the whole story because I knew I was going to play the game, so I just went and read about it, and I mean...
I didn't like that they kind of introduced this whole new character that didn't exist.
What's her name? That was, like, operating behind, like, the scenes.
This massive... It's, like, super important to the world beforehand. She was, you know, making change, you know, affecting people all the time. And they just kind of wove it into the old story. Yeah. And I didn't like that.
I didn't either.
But I still... I thought the traps were better and the combat situations were better, but...
In 2?
Yeah. But you didn't really get to that.
Did you guys get tired of the hacking?
Yes.
Yeah, because so the hacking was okay for a while, but then it starts getting faster, and then they start introducing, like, so many of those, like, blocks that basically, like, don't do anything and that you get into trouble with. And sometimes they'd cut it off so you couldn't actually complete it.
That's the thing I dislike most about the hacking, is that there's actually impossible puzzles.
Right, or... What they would do is, if you didn't move the first one right away,
right,
then you would also die.
Right.
And, you know, it's almost impossible to like, figure out, like, do you need to move the first one immediately? You don't, you know, sometimes you just don't know.
Exactly. You've got to, like, spam, find out which way that's the right way to go. Yeah. But if you wanted to make this hacking easy, you could.
No.
And you could take tonics and stuff and remove tiles.
Yeah, you could. You could make it a lot easier.
Oh, because that's what I did. I liked the hacking. I mean, it was still always, even though I equipped all the tonics that helped my hacking, it would still be impossible, or at least still be so fast. Like,
really?
The difficulty is all the way insane, and I still can't beat it. But those tonics that remove tiles, it's an ability? You have to actually go and remove tiles?
There's just
tiles?
Less tiles,
okay,
as far as I can tell.
Yeah, because I didn't equip those, because I always felt like they still give me so many of those.
Oh, I think those are the most important ones.
Yeah, big time.
I mean, you do want it to go slower, but... you need to get rid of tiles. That's the thing that makes you auto fail, is when there's just no path.
Yeah. Oh, so when there's sometimes, I mean, I don't see, I'm playing a puzzle and I, of course, I'm spamming and unlocking all the tiles so that I have my tiles to work with. And of course, I unlock a wall, you know, that
right.
is impossible.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
And then I read those tonics and say they remove, you have one less tile. And I look and I say, that's not going to help.
No, but you can put more than one of them in.
Right.
It's like one of them is like the zappy tiles. And the
but
other
isn't there one that removes like four? Yeah. Two less overload and two less alarm?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I had that one.
Yeah. Maybe this is much further
it
than
would still
I was.
Be a problem sometimes.
Yeah.
Right. No, I got this. I mean, but that one plus two more, you'd have eight fewer tiles. Yeah. Plus, they give you more options because not having a hacking tile means
right.
that you have a turn or something that you need.
Yes,
that's only
true.
One time have I ever failed. I've always felt like, oh my god, I need just one more right turn
yeah.
and I can't find it. But I always can. But one time I found like there were not enough
yes.
turns to make it to the end.
Actually, I had that same experience. It was only once. And more often, the problem would be that it would just be impossible to finish.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, usually I can find the one I need. If I've you know,
you can pretty much reveal most of the map, like if you just do it really quick,
mm-hmm.
And only have like your water flowing through like the first two tiles,
right?
And then you can do everything. But yeah,
only one time have I gotten to the point where I actually did not have the tiles that I needed to fix it
yeah.
to solve the puzzle.
Yeah,
can you actually die from the hacking
sure.
game?
You can.
You take damage.
I know you take damage. Can you actually die? Suicide?
I believe so, but I don't know.
Because I know every
can
time
you
I
really,
I don't know because every time I fail, I'm always brought down to a sliver of life. And then, of course, I'm going to hack this again. I'm going to refill my life, take a health pack, and then reattempt the puzzle and hope
just
that I don't
just use the auto-hack tool. That's
no, no, no. That's every time I run to those extremely difficult ones where difficulty's all the way up, I'll use the hacking tool.
What, yeah. Once the prolific inventor tonic becomes available, it's ridiculous not to use the auto-hack
yeah,
tool for
you can
almost
make
everything.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why? What does that tonic do?
Doubles the number of items you make when you make
no,
things.
It has the resources.
No,
I'm just kidding. Yeah.
It has the resources and consumes twice as much every time.
Right.
Oh, that's the thing for the when you're creating your own tools.
Right.
It
yeah.
has resources. Oh yeah. No. Okay. I have that one equipped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's my other silly gaming rule is that like I always have to have a certain number of ammo in my stash.
Right.
Right.
I always have to have at least three hacking tools. And if I don't have three and I need to hack something, I'll go and wait or I'll attempt the hacking game until I beat it.
Right.
Without using a hacking tool.
I have the same kind of rules, but they're so stupid because like you never get down to one. You're never like, oh my god, I desperately need to use two hacking tools and go under my three rule. I have no exceptions where I will go under this three rule.
I did do that in the last level. I knew that it was the last level because the thing kind of fills out like the chart.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so I ended up just making I think this is the last invention place I'll ever see. So I just made everything. I just emptied my inventory. There's all this stuff just hanging on the floor. And then I would just use auto hack tools everywhere and just come back to this place and pick more up. Worked out pretty well.
Okay. So I want to talk about Fort Frolic because that is a divisive level. You both didn't like it?
That is
Sander
a stage,
Cohen's level.
That's a stage where I threw my hand up and
really?
Gave up, yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say I didn't like it, but it felt like it was a distraction. Although I thought it was, kind of artsy and well done. I mean, it was like it was a well done level. But
I thought the character of Sander Cohen, was a interesting character. And I also thought
just crazy man.
Yeah, but well, and
crazy man slash
crazy,
performer,
morbid,
artiste.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's I don't know.
Evil artist.
It was an interesting thing because I felt like that level more than most fleshed out Rapture. Like you really got to understand the people that would come here and what they were going for was this extreme level of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it really gave a lot of background. But I always feel like, oh my god, I've got to get through Fort Frolic to move on with the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this huge impediment to progress and like you said, a distraction. I totally feel that same way about it. I didn't dislike it. I enjoyed it. But it definitely does feel like this is just some side journey where you investigate
mm-hmm.
Rapture some more.
Yeah.
And it just takes a bunch of time.
Yep.
I felt the same way. I mean, they do reveal one thing at the bottom, or not, I didn't say the bottom. I just feel like it's at the bottom. But isn't that one club where you go into the one girl's bedroom?
Oh, it's a critical piece of information to like the whole story. That's his mistress that has your child, and then that child gets sold to Frank Fontaine. And
yeah.
Yeah.
So that was, I mean, good for the story, but other than that.
But you have to, I mean, my problem with the Fort Frolic was that I was running around this map because you have all that freedom, and I'm exploring every nook and cranny, right. And it's not progressing the story until you find that room.
Yeah, that's true.
I think the design of that level is particularly bad at making it feel like a waste of time because, mm-hmm. well, first of all, you start out going to the exit, and then you're like, no, you can't use the exit now. You got to go back out. Right.
Yeah, that's true.
And then once you get working for Sander, you have to go out into the world and then come back and then go out again uh-huh. and then come back and then go out again and then come back. And you do that 3 or 4 times to take the pictures of his people.
Yep.
And you're just a lot of walking around doing nothing.
Yep. And not a lot of splicers to fight along the way.
A lot of splicers.
There are a lot of splicers.
Well, maybe in easy there's not, but in normal there's a lot of splicers, and they seem to respawn. I mean,
they respawn.
Yeah, they do seem to respawn.
Like for me, you know, there's the spider splicers that were plentiful in there, and a couple of the what are the teleporting ones, the magic,
right? Okay.
What are they called?
Oh yeah, the Houdini ones.
So those are the only ones I fought. But I mean, after I found that room, after I came back to the game, you know, and I had direction, you know. I finally, you know, the game was progressing, and you know, I was supposed to find those three guys, and there's lots of things to fight along the way. And I mean, that's the point of the game where I actually gave it another 2 or 3 hours. Mm-hmm. But it's just that when I first got into that area and I was walking around, had no idea what to do, and nothing was there to fight except for one Houdini splicer, just random one. But I will say something about Fort Frolic. You know, it actually did gave me a sense of a survival horror.
Uh-huh.
Just the mood atmosphere, just because of those salt frozen sculptures,
right?
Uh-huh. That, you know, that bleed.
Did they attack you?
No, they didn't attack me.
Oh, you didn't get to the point where they attacked you?
No, that the one you mean the one you milt them?
No. Those are the ice sculptures. Are actually frozen people.
Yeah. No. In I'm talking the about ice room, but like, I mean, I'm in with this room. You know, a family sitting around a dining table. And I thought it was kind of creepy, right? They're all like salt. They're all like covered in salt, and they bleed. I mean, you hit
there's
them or shoot them.
One part where you go down this like white. There's like all these white statues.
Yeah.
You walk down this hallway, and there's all these statues lining the thing, and there's this guy on a table, and then you turn around, and all the statues are gone.
Oh wait, no.
Is this like a secret door that you can open?
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that area?
Yeah, I did.
Did you not find that area?
Oh, it doesn't.
You must
sound
not
familiar.
Have explored enough. Maybe this was an unnecessary area to go in.
Okay, because I mean, I thought you were talking about the frozen guy. You're supposed to, you know, the frozen Houdini. You're supposed to take a picture of.
And then after that, like, there's a gate with a staircase down, and there's just like all this water area. Mm-hmm. Did you go down there?
Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't sound familiar.
Okay, well, there's just like waterlogged area, and there's all these frozen. Like, I'll call them salt statues because that's what you are. There are all these guys down there, and then you pick something up, and then they start breaking up and attacking you because they were just people standing still, waiting to attack you.
Oh, wow. I must have missed that.
Yeah. So, yes, I totally agree. That is a creepy area.
The whole game's kind of creepy, though.
It is.
It's kind of a horror game.
It really is.
But it's that part, just, you know, seeing those people, like, you know, it's like, oh, what are they going to do to me? And it's just, it's kind of like, in a way, very, like, cruel. I mean, they're like, these pieces of art that just, and the bunny that, you know, reminds me of, you know, what's that, Johnny Darko? Donnie Darko. Yeah, what's that thing? Frank? The bunny?
Yeah, I don't remember the name.
Okay. But I was like, what's going on with this bunny? You know, that was a creepy bunny in that movie, and like, I'm expecting something from this bunny.
The whole game has kind of depressing moments in it, like where you find families and stuff just dead. And
I like that about the story. Like, you know, they talk about this girl, Misha, who gets kidnapped, mm-hmm. and they talk about her a couple times.
Yep.
And ultimately, you can find the corpses of the parents who have, you know, they're depressed about her and they commit suicide, and they, like, there's pills spattered there in their corpses, but you have to, like, go unlock that room.
Mm-hmm.
And it is interesting. I like that they fleshed that out, that they left that. It's not necessary to find it. It's not a requirement. But when you do, it gives more character to the story that they've been telling. Okay, so We talk about sound or game. We talk about gameplay a lot. We talk about story. I think the graphics are decent, but I think it's more about stylized. Kind of like the way that WoW's graphics aren't great, but the mm-hmm. style's good. Mm-hmm. I really... Now, this is... Well, we should talk about that later. What else? Anything else?
What about, like, the Vita Chambers?
We'll talk about that later.
Okay.
You said you want to talk about some bugs.
Well, yeah. Well, there's a point in the game where I almost quit as well, and I didn't want to restart the level.
Uh-huh.
I was just searching. I opened a file drawer, and suddenly my character was stuck inside the file drawer. It was a clipping issue, mm-hmm. and I could not get out of that. I saved my game, reloaded, and I was still stuck in that file drawer. And, of course, it was 45 minutes into, you know, you autosave at the start of level, and I was already, enjoying the game, so that was going to be a breaking point for me. So then...
This is the first time you quit.
I almost quit, right? Uh-huh. So, I mean, I tried to get out of this and everything. It's like, okay, I'm done. But this is, a 3-hour session when I got to this point. Okay, it's just that I didn't know about the autosave at the start of level, so once I learned that, I was like, okay, I guess I could play 45 minutes again, but no, I want to try and get out of this thing. Because, you know, I tried using grenades to blast myself out. That didn't work. So, and then you guys suggested, you know, try and blow yourself up with the grenades. Like, they do so little damage. So maybe I'll just point it at my feet. And, yeah, I eventually respawned a Vita Chamber by blowing myself up with grenades.
I think you switched to normal. You would have done more damage.
That's what I was suggesting to you. I think I should have.
Just hard.
Or hard, yes.
I don't think, yeah.
If you could change game difficulty mid-game, would have done that. But anyways, yeah, I depleted my supply of grenades. Something I don't like to do because I don't like to spend my ammo. But I got out.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to replay anything at that point.
Yeah, I don't know. I think one time I had a crash at desktop, but I didn't really notice that many bugs. Just that it's a poor implementation on, just a poor Windows port in general.
Mm-hmm.
This was originally a console game?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So anyway, let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll do some letters from listeners. And we're back. Okay, so we got a couple of comments on Reddit, and I wanted to address those questions and comments and thank everybody for their feedback. The first thing, most popular, was by Rad Jage. I don't know how to say his name. RADJAGE. How do you say that? Rad Jage?
That sounds good to me.
All right, whatever. he says, is the ability to never die due to use of the Vita Chambers a flaw or compliment of the game?
I would say that it's a compliment to the game. But, I mean, that's just because they have to give you some mechanism in order to kind of respawn and keep playing. And mm-hmm. this one, they're trying to, tie it into the game rather than just making you, say, reload all the time.
Right, but say you're dealing with a big daddy, mm-hmm. and you get him down to half health, and then mm-hmm. you come back in a Vita Chamber because yes. he kills you, and you run over and finish him off, or, you just about kill them, and you run over and finish him off. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? I feel like it certainly makes the game more accessible, especially mm-hmm. with you guys who are self-proclaimed not really liking 3D shooters. You probably liked that more because it wasn't as challenging. But I don't know. It feels like you could cheat the system a little bit. Like, you don't have to win against Big Daddy. You just throw stuff at him and then die and come back and throw more at him.
So here's the problem. And that is, I almost never use Divided Jammer. When I made huge mistakes, I would almost always reload my game. based on a save that I had. And the reason is because, let's say I was fighting a big daddy and I did get him down half and I did die, and so I'm in a, you know, I came back in a vita chamber now. That probably means that I've lost like almost all my health packs at this point.
Right.
And I've done something wrong. Like I didn't do the guy right, at least not the way I wanted to do it. Like I messed up my combo or whatever it is.
Right.
So I would almost always reload because I'd be losing all these items if I used the vita chambers.
Right.
So that's, I mean, so it didn't actually end up being that helpful to me.
Okay.
Playing on easy, I only use a vita chamber when I committed suicide.
Okay.
Yeah, but I, in a way, you know, like as a purist, I mean, I like that it exists in the games so that it's accessible. I mean, people don't, you know, have the option to save reload if they wanted to. They felt like the vita chamber is a way to cheat.
Right. Well, so I was playing on hard, and I died a couple times on hard, and then the vita chamber restored me. And then I turned off the vita chambers, and I died a couple times, and I had to reload, and I hated the fact that I had to reload. I'm like, okay, I don't want to have to go do everything I did again. I didn't have a save like right before I entered combat with mm-hmm. this thing that killed me.
Right.
So I just don't want to repeat myself. And mm-hmm. for that reason alone, I felt the vita chambers were
useful
for me, the right way to go.
Right.
So, but then when I switched on to normal, like you said, you know, almost never, I'm not sure I ever did vita chambers.
You could actually turn off vita chambers?
Yeah. So, I think they're good. I think that because the game throws combat at you at weird times and you never know what's going to happen, the saves aren't very common, that you lose too much, and it can be a waste of time to not have them, which makes the game not fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the Vita Chambers were a benefit overall.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to use another comparison to Resident Evil here, but the game should have had an option or like some achievement or goal rewarding players who did not use Vita Chambers.
I believe there is an achievement if you get through the game on hard without using a Vita Chamber.
There you go. That's one achievement. In Resident Evil, you know, you got rewarded for never using, you know, first aid sprays.
Okay.
You know, that was... And those rewards are much more rewarding because they give you items.
Okay. I accept that. For the people who don't want it, don't, you know...
You can turn it off.
Achievement, but... Yeah.
Just got to save a lot.
Right. Yeah. Then you just in a save reload cycle.
I saved a lot anyway.
Yep.
I mean,
and
I
there
really
are
did.
People out there who are, you know, have a thing against save reload too.
I actually ran out of saves. Like you can have a lot of saves in this game. And I would just keep saving like when I progress the story a lot. And then
not quick save?
Not quick save, no. I would just because there was weird times I wanted to go like back further, like
right.
Especially in the first like two or three Big Daddy encounters when I didn't really know what I was doing. And then later, kind of when you figure them out, it gets a lot easier. But, I mean, I had on normal probably the first one of the Big Daddies that was in, like, the Fontaine's Fisheries area really gave me problems. And I had to, like, save a lot and reload a lot.
Yeah, I feel like you don't until you get your research down and you don't and you get a little bit more access to plasmids and things, you don't really have the tools you need to defeat a Big Daddy successfully, really effectively. So yeah, the earlier ones give me more problems than the later ones.
Yeah.
I don't know why I brought that up, but I did. Okay. So generally thumbs up to Vita Chambers. And if you don't want it, you know, you want to be hardcore, you can do that, but.
And they give you an achievement for it. So right. At least you're working towards something.
So the second comment, is from Cedar Wolf, and you know, he wrote a lot and I just want to acknowledge that he really contributed. But we don't have to go over it. We've talked about a lot of these comments that he's made. He really thought two things I want to address from here is just his final question and one randomly brought out point, which is does the game architecture make sense? Like, is it both effective as being a real world? Does it feel like a real world, or does it feel like a video game that's just forcing you down a path and you know, there are artificial blocks and there are artificial things, you know, things that take you out. of this the story.
I don't know. I feel like those are two different questions. But I bought into the world. I bought into the game. Like, I wasn't bothered by, oh, yeah, like, this little thing doesn't make sense here. Except some parts, like, you know, there's a grate. You know, some grates open for the conveyor belt, and there are some conveyor belts that are locked for good. I don't know.
Right.
But I bought into the world.
Okay. I think that the fact that it's not always linear, like, you go into these hub areas, and you go off to offshoots, and then you come back to those hub areas, mm-hmm. that really helped a lot. In making the world seem realistic, because it wasn't all just a straight line. Mm-hmm. But I definitely felt like things were closed that didn't need to be closed, and mm-hmm. and you were really being set down these paths. The one area where I really thought nobody would do this, and this shouldn't be a path you take, is when you're first introduced to Little Sisters, and you go out of this hole in a bathroom, and you climb through this catwalk on the roof in the lighting,
mm-hmm.
oh, yeah.
and you're looking down on the sister harvesting at him.
And you can't jump down from the catwalk.
And you can't jump down, yeah. but and you're like, who would walk up here? And why is this pathway here? Especially connected to a bathroom.
That's what I'm saying. It's like two different questions, right? I mean, that's why I feel like the environment, the world, yes. There are definitely gameplay mechanics that force you in certain directions, like as you mentioned. And sometimes I hate, like, I jump down into this open area, but there's some items upstairs I wanted to get to, but I can't get back to them. Even though I feel like I could climb or get around to it again.
Okay. So he basically said that he didn't think that that the world was very artificial, that it felt very realistic. And especially, I think, that last level in particular. Okay, so Fort Frolic, I think, is a good example where I really feel like you're going around in the areas the way people would get around. And that last level, which is the apartments, which mm-hmm. you didn't get to, that level's really like that. Like, you're going up elevators and yeah. staircases, and sometimes the staircase is broken. You can't get that place. But yeah. you go, you know, there's all these doors and stuff, and it's more yeah. like you're in an environment. Like, you've got to go someplace, but you just go upstairs in an apartment complex, and you go to the right door, and you go in.
I see. So all the doors don't work. It's a linear, is what you're saying.
Actually, most of the doors do work.
Most of the doors do work. Oh. And there's a lot of... I don't know a lot, but there were some extra apartments. That just had no reason to go in there, but you could.
But yeah, I went
like
in
Sandra
anyways.
Cohen's apartment was there.
Yeah.
Oh wait, so
all
you're
the
saying,
important characters' apartments.
So right. you're saying the final area is not linear, then?
Right.
Okay. So well,
so cool. and I agree with him on that these environments feel fleshed out and they feel like they could exist and that they function the way they should. But I definitely think there's some major points too where they just force you down this road and they're very gamey.
There's other things that take you out of the story too, like the fact that you can't interact with any of the characters really. I mean, they're all behind screens like we discussed,
right?
And then another thing that kind of took me away from the world was, like, you're a mass murderer of splicers and
they're bad people.
Everyone wants to kill you, and I can't figure out whether they just want to kill you or they want to kill everybody else too. And I think they want to kill everyone, right? Or like
some of them,
well, they obviously
together.
Don't kill each other.
Well, some of them.
Some of them do.
I never saw two splicers fight.
Did you? Oh, random splicers or scripted splicers? I was stuck in the file cabinet, looking through the screen window. Was when they first introduced the spider splicer, and I think it was a spider splicer.
And they're killing other.
And he was killing someone on the ground already.
Yeah,
he was executing somebody.
Even like the first part of the game, right? Isn't there like two people fighting, like right when you come into the, you know, down the giant elevator and into the world? There's like a splicer there killing somebody else.
It's definitely
else.
True. Mm-hmm. There's definitely times, but for the most part, like two random AI ones will not.
Oh yes,
oh,
talking
yeah, no.
about what they
no.
actually do and right. like what the story would have them do. Yeah, and okay. my point is that, like, I think everyone would almost be dead by this point because, I mean, everyone's just aggressive and wants to kill each other, and there's a lot of splicers left, it seems like.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We just run into each other and yeah. kill each other off.
I mean, it seems like the big daddies and splicers don't get along, though. I've
yes,
seen them
definitely
fight.
Definitely true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they only fight when a little sister is around?
I think they want to. They always try to attack the little sister, don't right. they?
I don't think so. I don't think they attack a big daddy.
Oh, well, I've seen
certainly
a big,
in
yeah.
certain areas they do.
Yeah.
Maybe at scripted events. Okay. But, like, I've been in cases where I've been fighting a big daddy and they've come and attacked me.
Oh yeah, but if you're around, then they'll definitely attack you. But if you're like kind of not where you can't be seen, mm-hmm. Or where if you are where you can't be seen, then you can watch them fight.
Yes, I've seen them fight, and I've tried to get a big daddy fight for me without using the plasmid, right?
Yeah.
I tried getting in the path of a splicer's gun.
Oh, I see.
And what it did, though, is aggroed the big daddy onto me.
Onto you?
Yeah. That did not work, according to my plan.
Oh, well.
Okay, so he ends this thing with a question, and that question is there any way to silence the vending machines? Did anyone else have this desire?
You mean the welcome to the world?
Circus of Values. Circus.
Yeah. Yeah, that one. Where it's like, hey, muchachos. The bandito,
right.
No, although I wish I could because it got tiring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, does it make a sound when you're close by or only when you access it?
I think only when you access it.
That makes a sound, too.
When you're close, right?
Yeah.
Because I do like to know that. Okay, yeah. I do like to know that, you know, I'm close to a vending machine in case I'm...
Just hit M and you look at the map and you'll see you're close to a vending machine.
The map's hard to read for me.
It is. It's hard to read.
It is.
Especially when you need to do multiple levels. I just feel like it flowed well.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like the arrows pointing to different
everywhere.
Places. Like, ugh.
Yeah.
Poor Frolic.
Okay, so I'm just going to pull out one other random comment from the post here, and that is by Riveted321. He says, I always cringe in the scene when you get your first plasmid. How did anyone else feel? Why? Why? This is the question I want to ask. Did someone just stab themselves with a needle and inject them?
I had that same question. I don't cringe, right? I don't know. Maybe because people have a fear of needles.
So it's disbelief that you have where you just can't believe someone would actually just do this?
I had a hard time. Like, why did he pick this up and jab it into his wrist?
Yeah,
it wasn't Atlas is like,
after surviving.
Inject yourself with this. You'll like
it. Said, inject yourself with this, would you kindly?
He didn't.
Oh, he didn't?
No. He doesn't say anything. Yeah. So, like, you get off the boat and you just find it and you're like, oh, I'll stick this in my arm.
No kidding. I just survived.
You don't just find it. He definitely directs you.
I have no idea what these plasmids are. Right? I just survived a plane crash and I am in this world and, you know, I don't know what the hell atom or plasmids do. I don't. I mean, the game's introducing me to it and, you know, I inject myself, but. You know, I have no idea why I'm doing this. I don't know what this thing's supposed to do for me. And wow, I have these abilities now.
It's like the thing that you don't believe that bootstraps you into the game.
Right.
I mean, it's just kind of, you have to get over that initial hurdle of disbelief and then you're there.
Well, I think what happens, if I'm recalling correctly, you're on the ground and, no, that's after. That's right after. Yeah, you come through this area and you hear the jingle.
Yeah, no, he tells you to do it.
My daddy's.
I don't know if
he
uses.
Daddy. He doesn't tell you to use the.
No, I think he does. He doesn't. He might not say "Would you kindly," but I think he does say "Go grab something," and then he definitely talks about "Oh, it's your first shot of Eve or whatever."
Right, he does say that,
and you know you're gonna.
We'll
feel
have to
bad
watch it because I really don't remember. But I always thought it was weird, and I even this time I'm like,
or just pause it and we'll go play it.
Okay, well, we could do that.
My daddy's smarter than Einstein, stronger than Hercules, and lights a fire with a snap of his finger. Are you as good as my daddy, mister? Not if you don't visit the Gatherer's Garden, you aren't. Smart daddies get sliced at the garden.
Alright, so we just took a quick break, and we reviewed the opening sequence, and he tells you to get a wrench, you go up a staircase, kill the splicer, and then... The Gatherer's Garden speaks, and you just walk up and stab yourself in the wrist with a plasmid for no apparent reason.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
I'm
surprised.
But anyway, did you cringe watching that?
I still
it didn't
have
make
my
me
shivers.
Cringe, but it was. I mean, what I'm trying to say here, it did definitely kind of throw
awkward.
You off a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. It's trying to make you feel bad, I guess.
It baffles me why anyone would inject themselves with some random stuff on their first visit to some weird place.
Yep.
Yeah.
After surviving a plane crash.
Right.
Must have been pre-programmed too.
Right.
Like, as soon as he saw it, he just, you know, he knew that he had to inject himself.
Exactly. He knew.
But he had to be ordered to pick up a wrench.
Yeah. Well, they didn't know what was going to be lying around.
Right.
But you heard, Atlas, right?
Uh-huh.
Would you kindly find a crowbar or wrench or something?
Yeah.
they lighten up on the would you kindlies later on in the game. He just starts telling you to do stuff. But the first couple of times, they subtly, you know, because you don't know about it yet.
Right.
Yeah. And playing the game, I mean, you're just going in that direction anyways.
Yeah.
So you don't realize you're actually following orders.
Exactly.
I thought that was kind of cool.
All right. So if you have any questions or comments you want to send in, send it to podcast@10-hp.com. And now let's talk about what we're doing next month. Next month's game, I think, is Paul.
Yes, okay. And I'm going to select Dragon Age, the first one. I guess just the origin story, Dragon Age Origins. Mm-hmm. And that's mostly because I found it on Steam for really cheap. I think it was like $7 or something during the Ultimate Sale. And I always wanted to play this game because I was always a fan of like Baldur's Gate and like games like that, where you're kind of like a party of adventurers and you wander around and do stuff. And so Dragon Age seems to be like, it's a good fit. I'm also a really big fan of BioWare games, especially after I played Mass Effect. And so I kind of wanted to go back and revisit Dragon Age and see how it was. So that's the game I selected.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad we could get Dragon Age on Steam, because you can't get Dragon Age 2 because of their stupid DLC thing. But anyway, we won't be able to move on to that. Not that we'll have enough time. I think that maybe 10 hours might not be enough time.
Yeah.
For...
it sounds like a few people in the group have already played it, though, so we'll probably get some extra time already added into our normal play times.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so feel free to play along and send us your comments at podcast@10-hp.com. So now we're going to move into a new segment that we're going to call Bonus HP, where everybody gets a chance to just talk about whatever they want to talk about for a couple of minutes and go down the road and find out what people are thinking. So I'm going to start with Anthony.
Okay.
What do you want to talk about?
So I was going to the bar the other night. Okay. And no, I was kidding. No. Well, recently, you know, I've been sitting down at the computer and not finding a game I want to play. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for just a quick game, and early today I played a game called Wanderlust.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a action RPG type of thing. I mean, like Zelda, top down type of game. But man, those graphics just really turned me off. I only played like 10 minutes of it before I had to leave. But I don't know. Something I've been exploring is actually not playing video games and getting into tabletop gaming again.
I like tabletop gaming, but they were kind of other people, and that's the part where it sucks.
I know. I was called out, to finish our 11th, 12th game of Risk Legacy, because we've put that aside for like almost a year.
I want to pick that up now.
Actually, I've always been interested, but I can't find a group to play it, and I don't have the time really either. So,
right. Yeah.
But no, I totally feel what you're saying. I have probably hundreds of games in Steam that are either unfinished or unplayed, and I'm like, I want to play I want to play these things, but I find that it's a fatigue thing. Like when I'm really tired, I'm less interested in exploring and playing games. I just want to play mm-hmm. something simple and that I already know how to play, that I've probably played to death, but I just don't want to do anything new or anything.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I know that's why I play a lot of mobile gaming, just because, that's so easy to play. I don't want to go get my mind wrapped around something new.
Right.
And so I actually went and installed a lot of games. I'm never going to play this. I don't want this on my hard drive anymore, because it's not going to click with me. And, and back to the table game, it's like, I'm going to break out the models and paint again. And talking to people, who I used to play with, it's sort of, it's motivation. Yeah. But we'll see where that goes in a few weeks.
I find I go through cycles of gaming. Like, I'm really motivated because I'm really into a game and I think about it at work and I want to go home and play it. And then there's other times when I'm just kind of like, I don't have any game I really want to rush home to. And I just kind of play League of Legends all the time because it's easy. Mm-hmm. Same kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's no game I'm motivated to play right now.
Yeah.
Nothing I'm really thinking about game-wise.
Bonus HP, Paul.
Okay, so my bonus HP will be Star Command. I've been playing it a little bit on my iPhone, and I'm finding it kind of fun. like you guys and some other friends, they seem to play it too, and they've been tracking it for a while, like as the Kickstarter was going along, and it kind of always seemed to me like some kind of turn-based strategy game in space where you, you know, wander around with your ship and kind of meet aliens and fight them ship to ship or on your ship or whatever. Kind of like Battle Stations is mm-hmm. like a board game. It turns out that it's more like a real-time strategy game with, you know, where you have like crew and you're always, how should I say it? You're pretty much stuck on your ship and you're moving guys around your ship to either fight boarding attacks or to like kind of get all the rooms to fire off, you know,
throw weapons or putting out fires.
Yeah. And like the actual ship that you're fighting, you don't even really see on screen or anything. They're just like some, they're like progress bars that you fight against.
Right.
So you're kind of fighting against like time or a machine or something.
In War Balloon's defense, you know, they've only, you know, this is only 30% of their original vision.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a real-time strategy with pausing?
No pausing, which is a bummer. Because, I mean, I'm okay with, you know, real-time strategy with pausing because then it kind of turns into your own kind of turn-based strategy if you really wanted to.
Technically, you can pause. Just that you can't do anything except view the battlefield. You can't issue commands during that time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's too bad because it seems basically like squad-based tactical strategy game only, you know, if it were, you know, more like the Jagged Alliance or something that where you've got real time, but you can pause and strategize and move people around and then activate the real time.
Yeah.
But
yeah, well, I don't know how much time we want to spend in bonus HP, but I play Star Command, mm-hmm. and I, you know, the thing about Star Command is I'm an original backer, so I feel like it's, you know, my baby too in a way,
right?
So that's why I always say I follow it and try promoting everything, but I see this game as more like, you know, it's a mobile game, you know. I also think, you know, casual. Like, you know, your Flight Command or Harbor games.
Right.
It's kind of like that. There's no pause for that. It's, you know, you're sending crew to different points to take care of problems. It's that kind of management game.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just, I mean, it doesn't, those games are special in that they're like, that's what they are, Flight Control, in Harbor Master. I have both those games, and I've played both those games. But those games are like, see how, you know, how far you can do it and how many points you can get before you end. It's kind of like Pac-Man,
right.
You know, there's like really no solution. This game actually has a narrative, and you travel through it, and it has scenarios that they expect you to beat. And so, I don't know, just it seems like it could just use a pause button. And
it always feels weird when you're responsible for multiple minds. You know, like you're taking control of five guys and you've got to act and react for five guys.
Yeah.
You're like, but I'm only one person.
That's
I should only be reacting for one person.
Hey, can you pause in StarCraft 2? Can you
pause
in Warcraft?
Right.
Yeah.
Those aren't the games I like, though.
I know.
Exactly. Same thing.
Like, hey, but hey, you heard it in the Q&A. You know, they're contemplating. And
they are.
Probably
probably add a pause button.
Yeah. It would help.
Yeah, it would certainly draw a new audience. But I shouldn't be too negative on it. I actually do like it, and I do go back and play it. I can see how they're going to kind of open up like the galaxy, and they're going to also, you know, just flesh it out a lot
more. Yeah, there's a lot of room for this game to grow.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's the thing about, you know, the PC version is where they're actually going to be doing
a
lot of the expansion.
I'll be interested to see. I'm never going to play it in
iOS.
I'm not going to play it on iOS. I might buy it on Android, but I'm not going to buy it on iOS and Android. Mm-hmm. So I might buy it on Android, which isn't out yet. And then I'm definitely going to play it on PC because that's what I kickstarted. I kickstarted the PC version.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be interested to see where it goes.
Yeah. Hey, Paul, I mean, you've already beat it once?
No. I am on a mission where there was like the traitorous admiral or whatever.
Humans? Okay.
And there's a mission after that where you have to go to some Antaran world or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I am.
This is the part that pisses me off the most about this game is that I so want FTL in a campaign style. I want a game that goes on forever and use like you are the Enterprise and you just have adventure after adventure and your guys build character and, you know, you just goes on forever.
That could be this game. I think in the future it could be.
Yeah. They originally plan on a sandbox mode where you go explore the. Their original vision was, you know, start off with a, you know, Starfleet Academy type of thing and then expand and, you know, start exploring galaxies and doing diplomacies, exploring the universe and researching stuff too. I forgot what their analogy was. It was something like Star Trek to Star Wars type of scale and scope.
Yeah, I mean, that's ambitious, and I hope they do it. I mean, I don't feel like they've gotten that at all in the first version.
Oh, no, no.
Because, like, you, while you do travel around different places and meet different races, everything is totally scripted. And even if you, like, select some of the other options, mm-hmm. I feel like they don't actually have any effect in the game, pretty much. There's, like, one part where you could just choose to, like, you know, pick the crew or not pick the crew, and that, I think that's, like, about it. I'm trying to figure out other places.
Oh, yeah, I'm on my I'm pretty much done because I'm on my third playthrough.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a very short story, linear story, and I'm going and picking different routes, and it's funny because
you get to see the dialogue.
It's dialogue changes and everything, and it's, you know, it's I mean, that's what it's got, that's his charm, it mostly is this the dialogue, the comedy.
Yeah,
but yeah, like the story changed drastically for me based on one choice I made.
Mm-hmm.
But it all leads to the same conclusion.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Removing for a second, if you can, the expectations and what it could be, is what it is fun?
Yes. Actually,
I mean, you played it three times, so I guess that's
yes. That answers that question.
I liked it too. Okay. I mean, just because I was looking for a game that was a distraction on my phone, and it definitely serves that fine. And there is like a feeling where your crew is getting better.
Yep.
They have different skills. And yep. That's, you know, here's my guy that does this, and here's my guy that does that.
Here's a, I mean, mild spoiler alert. I mean, your crew carries over.
Okay.
In a future playthroughs, and I'm like training them to be multitask.
Okay.
You know, level of the max, all their skills and everything.
And permanent does, injuries. Lose an eye and suddenly he's a Cyclops.
There's one permanent injury that does pain me. It's when they get sucked out.
That's a permanent that's death injury.
Yeah, it's sad. But I mean, and I've lost crew that way too. But if you read the AMA, what, ask me anything. Yeah, AMA, you know, that the goal was to make that fun. If that part wasn't fun,
failure. Then, failure, complete
losing
failure.
The people.
No, it's kind of like fun. Just watching someone get sucked out of the hole.
It's kind
of
cool watching someone get sucked out, but mm-hmm. it's not cool when you have to reload because you care about the, you know, your crew
you
member.
Hey, FTL, you try not to care about
that. It's not FTL.
It's not FTL, but I'm saying no. There's, and that's why I'm actually able to move on because I don't care about these crew members. It sucks that
some crew
I've
members.
Watched them max their stat and then they take a quick exit on my ship. But, you know, I just hire someone else and it gives me something to do. You know, like I'm
it's
not-
true. You do, if like you keep reloading all the time, then you run out of, you know, like, what am I trying to say? Yeah, if you keep, like, you don't get any new experiences. Mm-hmm. You know, you just always have the same crew and you're always max. You never hire anybody. Yeah. So it gets kind of boring.
But, exactly. And
but you also do love your crew. Like when Anthony, he's like my best like boarding, you know, red shirt guy, right? And
uh-huh.
he gets sucked out of a hole. I'm like, do I want to really reload that? Usually I do, but sometimes I let you down.
Thank you. Hey, but I don't know. I'm because I don't see how stats actually matter in the game right now other than unlocking skills, and I don't use any skills. Well, I use some skills, but it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, you don't,
so that's why I don't really care.
I think they do improve, like when you're in a room and assigned to a room, mm-hmm. don't they like improve like the speed?
What I'd like to think.
Okay.
I feel like two people perform the job better than one person in a room.
I think that's true too, but you never really find out any of these things.
No.
The only thing I can really find out is that when you're trying to reload ammo and you don't have any guys in the room, then it goes really, really slowly.
Yes.
But other than that, it's hard to tell between one and two guys.
Anyway, sounds fun. Sounds like it'll be interesting. I wish there were more campaigns. I wish there were more, you know, guy lost an arm and they got a robotic arm replacement, that sort of thing. But it's not campaign. It doesn't sound very campaign.
That's the Star Wars part.
Yeah. okay, so I'm gonna do two. It's really quick. I've been watching The League.
Uh-huh.
Great show. It reminds me a lot of Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Is that a TV show or a web show?
It's a TV show. I think it's on FX.
Oh,
and I'm watching it on Netflix. I don't even know what channel it actually be on. I don't watch anything on TV anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny. It's got a little bit of that Arrested Development vibe where they like wait to deliver the punchline of a joke. Like there's this one episode where they have a guy dress up in a costume to scare his daughter. And then he gets, then the daughter's not scared of him, and she loves him, and she gives him all their stuff, and then he leaves the house like he's robbing it, and the security guards see it. and he had been talking about how great these security guards are, but they're sucky, chill. And they don't catch him. So then later on, he's returning all the stuff, and he's returning the costume, and they tackle the guy who owns the house.
Oh, really?
Because they think it's him. Anyway, the jokes are, you know, I think it's funny. They have a long fuse, and that's a...
But you're watching on Netflix, so you're watching it in bulk.
Right.
Yeah.
It makes it better,
too.
Yes, because isn't that the problem with Arrested Development? Because
it's coming back?
No. Because at a time when it was airing once a week, jokes were too long, and that's why it didn't hold attention of viewers.
I think so.
It could be. But I also just think like the demographic wasn't very large for that show. Mm. And I think a lot of shows like Arrested Development suffer for that. Like Community doesn't have the biggest... fan base, even though the people like us all really like it. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just kind of a niche group.
So the other thing I wanted to say was, and this was really what I was going to have my bonus HPV about. I have played Dead Space 3 now, and I do not feel like the microtransactions affect the game at all.
Mm-hmm.
You really get a lot of resources, and there's absolutely no reason to buy more. They just kind of disappoint me.
Who disappoints you? The developer?
The fact
or...
that the microtransactions exist kind of disappoint me. The way you get resources in the game is you lay down these robots. Well, one of the ways, there's many ways, but one of the ways is you find these areas that are hotspots for resources and you lay down the robots and then you wait 10 minutes and then they come back to the bench and you go pick them up and they deliver a bunch of resources to you. But so that happens. And if you pay, then they come back in 5 minutes or they bring back twice as many resources. You can upgrade your robots. And those things aren't in the game. You have to pay to buy those things. So it's like, I want these things, but they're not justifiably valuable. But I'd still like to be able to get them, and I just can't.
You want to get them because of collectors or just costs of... living, whatever you call that, quality of life.
Quality of life. You know, I just like to have it. And it doesn't really affect anything enough to justify paying for it. But it, I don't know, it's just weird. It's like this.
That's how they're trying to get money out of your pocket.
It really is. I mean, it's just.
But you said yourself it doesn't really affect anything.
It doesn't, and I won't do it.
It pulls at your heartstrands
and
your pocket.
It pulls at me.
It pulls at you. Then mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished.
But, I mean.
And I think that's indicative of all design of microtransactions and things, is that even if they aren't, they're bearable and they're annoying in this way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just the ones you really hate are the ones where, you know, you hit the paywall where you can't progress unless you give us money right now.
Yeah.
Or you can grind it out for 2 million years,
because
hours.
Because I had absolutely nothing else to do. And I had installed Real Racing 3, which is another EA game. Mm-hmm. And I tried to play that. And it's true. The times are acceptably short. And you could switch between two cars such that you could keep playing for pretty much ever and never really be obstructed by the paywall. But it was still annoying because
it
was there.
That's a completely free game, though, right?
It is
that mobile or
game.
Is that a PC?
Right. It's a completely free game. And from what I've heard, I haven't played it, is that it's actually pretty good. Like, the actual racing part is pretty good.
Pretty good. I'm not terribly fond of... motion, you know, detection, because it's just fuzzy,
right?
Like, you should be steering this car, but when it's not quite real, it isn't.
That's more like the downfall of the mobile devices, though, unless like the racing game,
right?
But what my point is that they're basically giving you a game for free. You could play it for free if you wanted,
right?
Or you could give them some money.
But
isn't the problem with the microtransaction is that if you're going to upgrade parts on your car, you have to wait real lifetime?
Right. So if you upgrade the car, or the car wears down, like the more racing you do, your tires wear out, your engine needs tuning, those sort of things, they all generate time sinks that you need 5 minutes to repair this component and money. But you made enough money in racing to pay for it, and it's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
So then you switch to a different car.
At least you have that option. That's good.
To drive while you're waiting. But it is annoying enough that you're like, oh, I'm going to wait 30 minutes for this. So I want to keep doing this race to try to get better, but I can't right now. I got to switch to this other car, which maybe isn't the one I want to race in. Or maybe it's my fallback car because all my good cars are in the shop and I'm just racing this this junker because it's the only one open to me right now. The game definitely suffers for being the design and the fun of the game definitely suffers for these time sinks. I played it probably for 10 hours over the week that the week that I was gone, because it was the only thing I had to play, and I don't really want to play it anymore. And I only unlocked three cars.
Right.
You know, they're hella expensive. And
yeah, I heard that there's a pretty serious grind in that game.
Yeah.
But you have to enjoy the racing, right? It's not just the unlocking that everyone enjoys, right? I mean, in theory, a person who enjoys a racing game is going to like the racing part.
You need cars
yeah.
to race more.
Right.
Like, you can do the five races with the one car.
No, I understand.
You need to unlock a better car
right.
to get five more races. So it's like, if you enjoy the same five tracks
right.
in the same five order for 10 hours, yes, the racing is good, but it's not that good.
Right. But, I mean, why are you playing it? It's a racing game. I mean, you should be playing it for the racing, it seems to me.
Well, no, it's...
car enthusiasts?
With the exception of, like, NASCAR,
yeah,
racing games are all about dealing with different challenges. Once you master a track, it's less fun. So if you need a new car to go onto a new track, you're like, okay, well, I got to just repeat what I already know how to do.
Okay, so that doesn't seem like a microtransactions issue. It seems like a content. Like, they didn't put enough content in
there. Oh, there's content. There's tons of tracks.
Okay.
They're locked by cars, which
right.
are locked by the grind,
right?
Which is based on the microtransactions.
Okay, so what you're saying is someone who likes car racing would get bored of this game because there's just not enough, the tracks aren't unlocked quick enough.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And without paying money.
Without paying money.
Right.
Because you can pay money to get through faster. And someone who's like...
So how much money do you think you'd have to put into the game in order to like really enjoy it?
I think I read the article. Didn't someone calculate this out?
It's ridiculously expensive to
buy
everything.
No, not to unlock everything. That's not my question.
Well, it depends on what you like. Because, you know, if you're into like the super sport cars and you want the fastest cars in the world, those are going to be in there. But they're also going to be the most expensive thing.
Yeah.
But if you're like a tuner and you like, I want to drive a Civic or, you know, a Subaru or something, and I want to drive some common car but just make it really fast, it depends, I guess. I think you can't – there aren't enough options for just one car.
Mm-hmm.
You have to diversify if you right. want to enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
So I have no idea. I don't know how much things cost. Because I never looked in the winter. So
right.
I can't answer your question because I don't know how much money actually right. costs. But
so one of the things about this game is that you're making the trade. Like, it's a free game that you can play, and you can pay money if you want to experience more of it or more content or whatever.
Right.
And content faster. Whereas Dead Space is a game you pay for up front, and it has microtransactions in it. They don't seem very comparable, like, as far as like being... outraged about it,
right?
Because one, you know, going in, like, this is a game where it's a free game, they're giving you something, and the other one, you paid for it,
right? Well, I definitely don't feel like the microtransactions affected the gameplay of Dead Space, but they do definitely in real racing. I feel like you can easily ignore the transactions in Dead Space.
Yeah,
it's a little bit like in the back of my head eating at me, like, I really want that bot upgrade. I really want different suit options that, you know, that they have plenty of suits in the game. So they actually have like, I guess, five or six suits.
Yeah.
But the DLC, the microtransactions for Dead Space are not that important. And in fact, they actually have a more similar to Mass Effect microtransactions in Dead Space. You buy these random kits, and inside the kits, a bunch of resources, but also a unique part, which can be used in crafting, which is best. You know, it's Mark 5, and the only things you can find in game are Mark 2 or 3 or something like that. So you get
a lot of money.
But you can use the resources you get in game to buy those things, just like Mass Effect. Either pay money or use the resources you get. To buy those.
Oh, so you're saying Mark and Mass Effect, the Mark 5 are available in game 2? Or only available through microtransactions?
You play multiplayer and you get money, and then you buy these random like booster packs.
Oh, okay,
and
okay.
They
okay.
contain random items.
Or you can just spend real money and get them.
And right. get random items.
Okay.
it's kind of a bummer.
You can never buy the thing you want. You
yeah.
have to get random
yeah, items. Yeah. But it's like a booster pack. Like, yeah. Exactly. But at least the option to acquire those items is available without spending cash.
It's right. true.
Yeah. Just yeah. requires multiplayer instead.
Right.
That, okay. Yeah. At least, I mean, because I play a lot of free-to-play games. At least your game doesn't require you to actually set your phone down
right.
to wait. Like, you're able to switch to another car and play versus, oh, I got to, in order to advance in this game, I got to just, you know, set it down.
Or
know?
It's more like, I think Real Racing that does kind of have a paywall, but it's like 2 hours in or however long it takes you to go through all your cars. I mean,
well, they all need to be repaired.
So that's the thing. Depends on if you're wise to the paywall or not.
Yeah.
Because you start with one car.
Right.
And if you don't put every dollar you have towards getting a new car
yeah.
as soon as possible,
yeah.
you'll hit that wall really early.
Right.
Because if you like upgrade your car a lot, then you'll have no money and you'll be at the point where you need to right. upgrade and repair and wait. So as soon as you can get a second car mm-hmm. and do different races, then you can start, you know, going to different places. But mm-hmm. if you just buy the one car and you stick with it and you upgrade it, that's going to cause you to have to wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I wonder,
yeah.
Oh, this is my argument to Chris always, right? I tell him, you know, he has to accept that, you know, you should be able to put down these quote unquote casual games. You know, I know you want to play a game and just sit down and play for hours on end. Well, but it sounds like those games where, you know, that I talk about where you hit a paywall, you can't play the game anymore. You just pick up, like,
Real
play
Racing
four
is
of those
particularly
games.
Bad. Because you have five stats, right? You have your tires, your suspension, your engine, your oil, your engine oil, I think of the same thing. Anyway, five stats, and they're each degrading at different rates. Mm-hmm. And you can choose to, each one you repair adds mm-hmm. time to your repair. So, like, maybe it takes 2 minutes to change the tires. Oh, and by the way, more expensive cars take longer to yeah. change the tires.
That's okay. what I figure.
So, like, you know, maybe it takes 2 minutes on your little Nissan, but you've got this Maserati, and it takes 30 minutes to change the tires. Seriously.
Right.
But those are, I don't know. I see those like, oh, that's not so bad, because in the games I play, you know, those times go up to 36 hours.
So say you spend 2 minutes to change your tires, and then you race again, and then it's like, oh, now your oil's done. So now you need 5 minutes to change your oil. Like, I guess I should have changed my oil at the same time, but that's inefficient because the cost is the same if you change it when it's ready or if you change it early. And, you know, so now I've got 2 minutes and then I get to play some and then 5 minutes and then I get to play some more and it's
something else goes
so
down,
in your yeah. 10 hours, how much time did you spend not playing, like when you wanted to play?
I never had to put it down. For the most part, I went back to, I had three cars
uh-huh.
and mm-hmm. I got them as quick as possible.
Yeah.
So I was cycling between the three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you had three crappy cars.
But I had two crappy cars and one decent car.
Yeah. But your decent cars are the car that you've been working on. But you having three cars like that is what allowed you to keep playing the game.
Right.
But you're going to eventually reach a point where you're going to hit a paywall. Where
but
you
I'm in
go
a paywall right now where I can't race anything but the races I've already done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've either gotten first place in all the races or I'm stuck at a point where I don't have a good enough car to get anything better than like fourth.
So you're just mm-hmm. grinding now.
So I'm just grinding to get more money to unlock more races and to get better position in certain mm-hmm. races. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm stuck now.
Stuck as far as content, not paywall stuck.
Right.
Yeah.
I could keep playing. I can play. I just yeah. can't play and advance.
Yeah.
So my takeaway is, my point is, I reviewed Dead Space. It's not as bad as it was made out to be.
Uh-huh.
But still, microtransactions can really impact the experience of a game.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, especially if they're done wrong. I'm still not. I think the jury's out on whether the Real Racing game is done wrong. It sounds like it might be done okay.
For one who plays, you know, free to play, it sounds like it's done right.
Yeah.
In order to make the company money and get people to want to play it.
Yeah. I'm playing Sid Meier's Ace Patrol right now, and it also has microtransactions in it. And I haven't really fully explored it, but I'm wondering like when the point is going to come up that I'm like, I can't play this anymore because they're going to want to charge me. Or
that's
gonna,
what I want to ask you. How much time have you given this game so far?
Only about an hour.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's not that much.
The Android Marketplace sorts games by free or paid.
Uh-huh.
And I almost always, I can't think of an example. I can't think of an example of a game that's in the free section that I have enjoyed.
Huh.
Like, I'm always pissed off when I see an ad. It's like, hey, you played one turn. Here's an ad.
You know? Your threshold is very, very small for the.
It is free. Very small.
At least they're ads. It's like, you know, the paywall is
my problem. I played a game of, you know, Picross?
Picross, yeah.
Yeah, there's a Android version of that. It lets you play like 8 or 10
easy puzzles,
and then it makes you pay to get the
new extra puzzles.
Yeah. And I almost would have done that for that game because it didn't have ads, it didn't have anything, it just locked your content. Except that I couldn't deal with the tapping. Like, it was hard to play because, like, when I play Picross on the
DS, stylus.
Yeah, the stylus, and it's very exact. But this one, you're like, I tap, and then you can drag a line. But if you have to tap twice to get X's, and
The mechanics didn't work for a mobile device.
Yeah, the mechanics were really hard for
a mobile
device.
Doesn't Android have a stylus
add-on?
Because I know iPhone does.
You got to buy it. Or
I think my phone might have come with one.
No, seriously, the stylus. I mean, the cheap stylus are like a couple pennies.
Yeah,
25 cents. But I mean, the thing is, how accurate are they? You know, for a phone.
I don't know. Maybe I should use it though, because there's some parts in Star Command that are pissing me off.
Well,
like I can't click on my guys right, or you know, I end up clicking on one guy and then clicking on another guy, thinking I have that guy selected.
Yeah, no, I have those annoyances too. But the thing is, I mean. You know, I have an iPad. Well, not my iPad.
Yeah.
I haven't tried the game on that yet, but I could totally see it performing much better on the iPad.
Yeah.
Or just, what's it called? Real estate.
I had to start over, though.
Yeah.
Needs cloud.
So if you listen to this podcast, give us a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. We might even read your name. If you give us 5 stars, we'll definitely read your review. I think that's... Oh, and if you have any feedback, send it to podcast@10-hp.com. And good night from 10HP.
Good night.
Good night.